Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. And we're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, direct on my cell phone at 396-0577. We always like to thank the station and everybody here for working to make this happen. Over there, working the board for us, Mr. John McKay. John, how are you doing?
Well, getting ready to get the smoke out of my eyes.
Well, it's been a little crazy this last week too, and it's kind of strange to look up there now at Rattlesnake and
see. Well, for the second time in 6 years, they had to set it on fire on purpose.
It
to backfire.
Is a little bit of a different color these days. That is for sure. But yeah, it'll be nice to kind of get through some of that. A big shout out and thank you to all our firefighters and everybody that were in town. It looked like a mini war zone out there in Benton City at the high school and middle school. But man, yeah, just a huge, huge thank you to everybody from the area and from outside the area that came in to help keep our families safe. We really, really appreciate that. And back, we had a little encore show. Tom and I were, it's a little rare, but we were both gone at the same time last week. So, McKay, thanks for running that encore show and work to make it happen. Tom, welcome back. How's everything going?
You know, I'm great. Lance, we were just talking before the show how much I love Alaska. The fish one was a little bit slow. We still brought back a lot of fish, though, and had a great time up there. Definitely came back recharged and ready to go.
So, yeah, you made it a little further north than I did. And so you were keeping Alaska in check, and I was up in B.C., up in Kelowna, in British Columbia.
Well, I think Alaska was keeping me in check, probably.
Probably.
But we had a nice time, and you were up in that same neck of the woods.
Yeah, so we had a great time and a great area and a great trip to Canada, and they let me back in the country.
Well,
so
good.
Came across the border, so
good.
Glad to be home.
And I took our son up there. You know, Jed is 8 months old now, and first time flying, did really, really good, and everything went smooth.
Yeah, I told you. I think you have this window until about 2, and then that 2 to 4,
we might be buzzing around the plane.
We might change your tune a little bit.
We'll check.
We'll check back in on that one for sure. Well, we always like to start off with a crazy real estate story, and lately I've just been in this repurpose utilization type of rehab mood. And so the house this week was just absolutely incredible. So pulled this off of Zillow's blog at Zillow.com, and somebody took an old fire station that was built in 1887, converted the upstairs to a residence, and then the downstairs to a 3,000 square foot shop or workshop, so you could have your business and then live in the upper level. And I tell you what, the brick walls, original hardwood floors, wood beams, this place was absolutely incredible. So just over, and this is in Central Florida, just over 6,800 square feet. So huge, huge place, because a lot of it's open warehouse style in the lower levels where the fire trucks used to park. But the price of that home coming in at $849,000.
Modest.
Compared to some of the other ones we have for our crazy real estate story, yeah, I think you're actually getting a little better value there. And that's Central Florida, which does not quite have the prices that we see up there in some of our New York stories, for sure.
Lance, I like that segue from the fires we've had here to converted firehouse.
You like how I caught it this week? There was a lot going on there this week. You know, I get rested up on our vacation.
You're like, how do I tie this together?
And I have these great ideas coming back. So we all, one of the things Tom and I are always doing is we're like, what are you seeing in the market? What's going on? What are the type of things that you're dealing with? And in the past, we've had appraisers on the show, and we've talked to appraisers. But man, in the last 2 months, I tell you what, when I really took a look for our radio show topic and called Tom, I said, we are just seeing a lot of, and not always major issues, they can be major, but a lot of minor issues and some delays coming up with appraisals. So I really wanted to talk a little bit about appraisals this week, some of the strategies you can use when you're looking at valuing your house, and it could be for a number of reasons. It doesn't necessarily always have to be a home sale. Sometimes there is appraisals when someone is refinancing their house. Sometimes there's an appraisals when people are getting divorced and they need to figure out the equity stake in the house. There could be an estate sale, and the estate, maybe a family member wants to buy it from the estate internally, so they'll want to get a valuation of that. So there's a lot of different reasons for appraisals, but basically what an appraisal is that is a determination of the current market value of the property or the home in question. And so why do banks order appraisals? And so really going back to a basic level, and I can just, I'll make the numbers crazy so it makes sense, but banks want to make sure that the property that they're lending money on, the property that is securing the debt that they're going to lend the money on and give the money to, is enough to cover the value of what they're lending. So, for instance, if someone was buying a $100,000 house, a bank would not want to lend that person $1 million.
That is very correct.
Because if they stop paying on the $1 million and they've secured that with a $100,000 house, that's their only recourse that they're going to have, basically. And so and the numbers, as they get smaller, it gets a little more complicated when they're closer to the values. But you look at it, same thing. A bank doesn't want to give somebody $250,000 if the house that they're lending that money on is only worth $150,000. Because then if the bank has to take that house back or the borrower stops making those payments, then the bank is going to be in trouble. They're going to be in a negative equity position. So the bank wants to make sure that they're lending less than what the property is worth so that they're protected. And so a lot of times we talk about on the show loan-to-value ratio, and we talk about what percentage somebody is putting down. So when we do that, for instance, on a $100,000 purchase and someone's putting $10,000 down, the bank wants to make sure that property is really worth $100,000, and then they'll lend their $90,000. Mm-hmm. So it's going through that process of really being a protection mechanism for the bank. A lot of times there's confusion where buyers think, that it's a protection mechanism for them. And in one sense it is, because it makes sure that they are paying an amount or purchasing a property that is worth it. But in the end of the day, the bank cares a lot less about what the buyer thinks and a lot more about them being protected for what they're lending.
Lance, I think everything you said makes perfect sense. But what's scary is, I've been doing this 13 years. And when I started, there was loans that went to 130% of the value of the home. And that's why all that happened back in 2007, 8, 9, 10. And it's definitely a lot more stringent. And there's not a loan out there that goes above 100% loan to value.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's crazy when you and I talk about it today. But yeah, when you and I were in the business and started out, and we saw that back in the day, because prices were increasing so fast that banks thought it was worth the risk that they were lending, yeah, like Tom said, 30% over the value of property. So the appraisal comes in at $100,000. The bank's like, hey, we'll give you a loan for $130,000.
You want that extra $30,000?
Yeah, because we think in the next 2 years, the property's going to increase to that value. And so that created a lot of issues. And so even getting more basic than that, one of the backgrounds I wanted to go into just a little bit is that nowadays, a lot of people don't realize what exists is what's called appraisal management companies. A lot of times you'll hear people throw around the acronym AMCs. So appraisal management companies were created, and what they do is they work with lenders and appraisers to kind of facilitate the ordering and the tracking of the appraisal. And this was really brought to light in 2009, right after the crash. There was massive calls in the legislatures to bring some sort of solution to this problem that created the housing crisis. So what happened back then was they developed a set of appraisal rules called the Home Valuation Code of Conduct, HVCC. Now, that no longer exists as it did back then, but many of those same regulations became what did exist, and that was the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform Act that a couple of years ago went into place. So a lot of those rules were formulated that really brought about the proliferation of the appraisal management companies. Because what they were trying to do and what they were trying to prevent was during the housing crisis, a lot of fraud happened and collusion between real estate agents, lenders, and appraisers. So all the bad stories you heard about people going to jail and prison were usually some sort of collusion to the fact of, hey, I got this property to sell. I think it's only worth $100,000, but the lenders, if we can get an appraisal at 140, they'll lend 140, and then we can sell it for 140. And so then, you know, the appraiser would go and, or the real estate agent would go and buy that appraiser a new car, and then he would, you know, appraise it for 140.
I'm like cringing as you're telling me this story.
I mean, these are like, you know, gross oversimplifications, but like, I'm not even making this stuff up. These are the types of things we read about in 08, 09, 10. You're exactly right. You know, when Tom and I talked about that, we cringe because it was just, it was crazy what was happening. Mm-hmm. So one of the things they did is they said, okay, we need to take away this interaction between the lender picking the appraiser and the appraiser knowing the real estate agent. And we need to put a buffer here in place that says, and that's where the appraisal management companies came in and said, raised their hands and said, hey, we'll be that buffer. So you, Mr. Lender Tom Coyne in Kennewick, Washington, our appraisal management company is in San Diego. You don't know me at all, but you'll order an appraisal from me. And then I'll develop my own set of third-party standards, and I'll have 20 appraisers on my list in Tri-Cities from those standards, and then I'll randomly assign and pick one of those 20 appraisers. So that the development of that process was now to take that collusion away so that it could not happen. And so that's when those companies really started gaining steam and increase. Now, of course, with any new system, they're developed all kinds of problems. There was some bad appraisers on those lists, ones that didn't get things done on time. And it took a little while for those management companies to shake that out to where now I'd have to refer to Tom, but I feel based upon especially Tom's closing time periods and the appraisals that he gets to us, that you guys really have that streamlined now.
You know, it's better than it was. When HVCC first came out, it was an absolute nightmare because what I looked at it as is I have no way to hold these appraisers accountable anymore because I have no control over who these orders go to. Where in the past, if I was ordering through, and I remember the guy I used to use, I probably shouldn't name drop him, but he was great because he delivered the reports timely. When we ordered a report, what we wanted to see is give me a quick turn time. I need to see the thing in like 1 or 2 weeks. Where when you throw an AMC in the mix and all of a sudden this guy starts delivering reports in 2 to 3 weeks, so we're seeing a 1 week extra turn time, there's absolutely nothing I could do. If we were seeing 3 week turn times, we're just not going to send that guy a report anymore. We're going to send it to someone else who wants to work a little harder. But the AMCs kind of took that power away from us. You know, when I think of the good and the bad of AMCs, the good is for the client, the collusion's gone. I mean, the appraiser's going out, he's talked to nobody in the transaction, and he's giving us a value. The bad is you added a whole separate organization into the mix. So what do you got to do when you have another business? You got to pay him.
Absolutely.
So the cost of appraisals went up. And the accountability piece is, sure, the AMCs have their own rules, and they hold the appraisers accountable in their own sense, but if we saw turn times getting out of hand, we're just not going to use that appraiser anymore. So there's things that I like about AMCs and that entire process, things that I don't. But I think overall, it's been a good change.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons we did bring this up for a topic is recently with our hot market, we're not the only market that's having a hot market in the last 2 years. There are massive amounts of increases nationally in hot markets. You're seeing Seattle, you're seeing California markets, you're seeing many, many of the markets have some of their best first half years that they've had in the last 6 or 7 years. So what this has done is this has put a squeeze on the appraisers. And so when there's appraisers out there and they're doing double their workload that they normally do to try to get all of these transactions done, you start to see the turn times increase.
Not only that, these busy times happen when people take vacations.
Absolutely, yeah.
So these appraisers are people too. You know, they want to go to the beach with their family.
They're absolutely. Yeah. And the appraisers we're seeing right now, the ones right now, is I'm seeing them now booking 2 to 2.5 weeks out before they can even get an appointment, an inspection appointment. So general standard of practice that you normally see with lenders is you have a 10-day inspection period. They do the inspection, and then upon mutual agreement of that inspection and knowing that we're moving forward, then they'll order the appraisal. So day 10 comes on, so you're a week and a half into the deal. Then they order the appraisal, and the appraiser says, okay, great, I got the order, and my inspection period to measure the property and take pictures and just start on the appraisal is in 2.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, oh my gosh, 2.5 weeks plus a week and a half. Oh, shoot, I'm at 30 days right now. You can't close.
No.
So a lot of agents got really used to, even last year, writing 30-day close times. And with what's happening right now with appraisal turn times and the amount of work that's happening, is we're seeing more delays than we have before, or needing to write 45-day to 50-day purchase and sale agreements. And that's just not what the consumer or a lot of the agents have been used to over the course of the last year and a half. Twice this week, we called other agents where they submitted us offers. They don't see as many transactions as we do. They submitted us offers. They submitted them with 30-day close times. We present them to our clients, and then we called that agent and said, hey, I just went through a 3-week extension with the same lender that you just sent a 30-day purchase and sale agreement over on. Do you really think this is going to close in the 30 days? And it was shocking because neither of them had any idea. They're like, gosh, we didn't even think about that.
Jeez.
And we're like, okay, well, here's what's happening in our market and some of the results. So I think knowing those turn times and what they are right now and the pressure that some of the appraisers are under is important to note for what's happening with close times of transactions and when you want to be in your house.
This last week, you know, every week we get an update from our appraisal team on what turn times are. Tri-Cities is about the best in all of Umpqua's footprint. So this report that I get lists all that we will have 4 AMCs here locally. It lists the average turn times of our 4 AMCs in Tri-Cities, and they just went from 2 to 3 weeks quoting to 3+ weeks.
Yeah.
Is what they're saying. Now, Oregon is the worst in the entire country, and it's 5 to 6 weeks in Oregon for an appraisal.
And so you're talking about, yeah, that's crazy. I mean, you're talking about going out 2+ months on your closing time. So definitely something to really be aware of. That's a little bit of history on where those appraisals came from, how appraisal management companies were formed, and how we're seeing that locally impact our deals here. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk to Tom about what gets called out on these appraisals that causes a lot of delays and what he's seeing from the lender side of the appraisals.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been talking about appraisals today, a little bit about what's going on in the local market with appraisals, what we're seeing on the real estate side of things and on the lending side of things with appraisals. Sometimes it can really be a pins and needles type of situation as sellers and buyers are waiting to see that appraisal, especially in a hot market like we've had in the Tri-Cities. And one of the reasons is there's a lot hinging on those appraisal reviews. Sometimes sellers only want to move if they get a certain amount of equity. So they put their house on the market. In a hot market, it sells for a high price. But then they're worried, will it appraise for that price in this market? Especially if you're setting a record for a new price because of low inventory. So a lot goes into that. At the same time, we see our local appraisers under an extreme high workload environment right now, which causes some additional stress and also some delays in the transactions. But one of the things we wanted to talk to Tom about is what are some of the common things you see from the lender side of delays, maybe things that could be prevented, and what are you dealing with from your end of the table with these appraisals?
You know, Lance, I absolutely love that we're going through this topic because just like you said before the break, we're still seeing contracts come over with 30-day closings. And then I send that email, of course, right out up front. Hey, guys, you know, this is not going to happen. The appraisal is going to take 3 weeks by itself. Then we got the TRID rules like we've talked about that take 3-day wait period after that. So the turn times, they're not what we like to see. But we also have to remember, not only do we have an extremely hot market like we've been talking about for the last 6 months, we have incredibly low interest rates, which does what? It drives refinances. So all these refinances that are going on also need appraisals. So not only do we have a good, strong resale market, but we also have a lot of refinances coming through the pipeline because of the very, very, very low interest rates. So they are just busy. And like we were saying, it's about 3 weeks right now to get a report back. But when you hit on it perfectly, what banks look at for an appraisal, we want to make sure that we're not investing more than what our collateral is worth. And we also use that figure to determine loan to value. So every loan out there has some sort of loan to value requirements. And let's say, for an example, you have a loan that has a 95% loan to value requirement. We're going to use that appraisal to determine that loan to value. And if you have a sales price of $200,000 and the appraisal comes in at $200,000, then the client just makes their down payment based off the $200,000. Now, let's say you have a house at $200,000 for sale, but it only appraises at $190,000. The client's loan to value, let's say they're putting 10% down, is going to be based off the 190. So say 90% of 190, that's the max loan amount. So they essentially have to make up that difference of the low appraisal.
Right, because you're not saying they can't get the house. You're just saying instead of lending 180, now you'll only lend like 175.
Yep, exactly.
And so, but they have to, out of pocket, pay the extra five.
Make up the difference.
Okay.
And so that's to ensure that we're meeting the guidelines that are set for whatever program we're using and making sure we're in the appropriate loan to value position. Now, the things that we're looking for on appraisals, the main thing is the comparables. Now, the comparable properties have generally sold within the last 6 months. They're similar in size and similar in location to our subject property. And then the appraiser goes out, they look at the general condition of the property. Does the location have views, the different size and features of the home? And then they start tallying up what we call as lenders adjustments. Now, these adjustments are tallied up and we have a net and a gross adjustment. Ideally, a perfect comparable has zero adjustments, meaning that the home is exactly the same. The comparable home is exactly the same as our subject property. But Lance, that doesn't happen.
No, it's pretty rare. I mean, even if you have a 1,300 square foot Ajo West Pasco and you have another 1,300 square foot Ajo West, that's usually about as close as you get in a track home environment.
But one of them has had some new tile work and a deck on the back or something.
There's always a little adjustment.
Yeah. So we always see these adjustments. So ideally, our adjustments are as low as possible. But sometimes you get a unique property and you have to go further out. Or maybe you have a property that's down on the Yakima River and it's got some frontage, but there hasn't been any other home sell in Benton City on the Yakima River in the last year and a half. Well, now the appraiser has to say, well, I got to take comparables from West Richland, or maybe I need to go to Columbia River. And they try to find the best comparable homes. When you start getting these unique properties, the adjustments start increasing. And then we rely on the appraiser to validate and give us some sort of reason and explanation, make us feel good about these higher adjustments. So that's where it can become a challenge. But ideally, the smaller the adjustments on these comparables, the more realistic indicator of the value of the home. Now, we see stuff all the time, and this drives me nuts because some of them are just absolutely the standard in the industry. Everyone should know about them. And when a listing agent puts a house up for sale, they should know that we need carbon monoxide detectors in that house.
Yes. And it's even on the disclosures that the seller has to fill out.
Every time. So when the appraiser goes out, occasionally they'll say, yes, your home appraises at the sales price, but it's subject to certain things. And one of them we see a lot is carbon monoxide detectors. And the bank accepts that and they say, okay, great, we have our value. We'll sign the file off at underwriting. But before we close the loan, those subject to items have to be corrected. What this means is we got to send the appraiser back out to the house again. And guess what? They charge our client additional fees to do that.
And it's now Washington state law that sellers have to, when you sell a property, a residential dwelling, you have to have a carbon monoxide detector in it.
So if you're selling a house, just go down to Lowe's, pick one up, stick it on your wall before that appraiser goes out.
And I will tell you, Tom, what I've had to do in my office is I have four carbon monoxide detectors in one of our desk drawers. And
good.
I hope all my sellers don't hear this, but I call it my emergency carbon monoxide detector stash, because if we know an appraiser's coming out and the homeowner's out of town or gone for the weekend or hasn't gotten to it, we can run out there and toss these in there.
And put one in. No, that's a good idea, because, I mean, those things cost $15
yep.
to buy them, but it's going to cost our client $150 to send the appraiser back out to verify it's put in if it's not done at the time of initial inspection. Another thing we're seeing a lot that subject to is on FHA loans. You have to have the earthquake straps around the hot water heater.
That was on my list. I didn't tell you, but you hit my number one and two.
Yeah, we're seeing those a lot lately. So, and there's a good chance if you're selling a house that your client might use FHA or the buyer might use FHA financing. So do yourself a favor and just go put these earthquake straps on your hot water heater.
I thought you were going to say there's a good chance we're going to have an earthquake.
Well, I hope not.
One of my older daughters and her fiance buying
meteorologist
a house.
Tom Boyd.
Yes. And they were talking about that. The home inspection and the earthquake thing.
Yeah, so. It'll get called out on those inspections. That's a great one, Tom.
Let's see other ones. We don't see this as much, but it still comes up as peeling paint.
Yep.
So when you have older homes, the concern is lead in the paint. So if you have peeling paint, that needs to be pressure washed off, repainted. Another thing that comes up is so simple too is those little covers around your light switches and outlets. Really, anything that pops up that you say to yourself, this could be a health or safety issue. Those are the things that appraisers look for, and they're going to make their report subject to, and it becomes a problem with the lender.
Gotcha. Those are good ones, Tom, and absolutely the almost identical list that I had, because I know we are both seeing that a lot, and it really can prevent a delay, because not only is it the $150, it's also an additional delay, 3 or 4 days potentially, because now the appraiser has to submit that to the appraisal management company, then to the lender, back to the appraisal mm-hmm. management company, and it really can take some time. So that could be 3 or 4 additional days in already in a transaction where we know those time frames are getting stretched out a little bit. Good information about those appraisals, Tom, and some of the things you can do ahead of time so you don't have to worry about an additional delay. I do want to get some properties on. We have put on some amazing, amazing inventory in the last 2 weeks, and there are some great properties for sale, which I know in this tight inventory market, people have been looking for. Pick number one, 3889 Hazelwood Drive. This is out in West Richland. This is a 4-bedroom, 2-bath Rambler that also has a bonus room. It's 2,200 square feet, new laminate wood floors, large living room, gas fireplace. You got a huge kitchen with tile floors, full backsplash, island with a breakfast bar. Absolutely fantastic, fantastic home. Private master suite. And then the bonus family room also leads out to a covered patio, great views of Candy Mountain. So West Richland property with that square footage coming in at $299.9. So under $300 for that West Richland location. Very, very good property. Pick number two, this is 405 North Road 40 in Pasco. This is an amazingly updated all brick, 4-bedroom, 3-bath Rambler with a basement, very, very close to the Columbia River. This is 3,470 square feet. Beautiful maple flooring, bright living room, gas fireplace, all of this, and it has a in-ground gunite pool. So you're close to the river, you have a pool, beautiful kitchen, built-in double ovens, great, great property. And this is coming in at $357,000.
Wow.
So that is a fantastic, fantastic Pasco property. And then pick number three, 3103 South Highlands in West Richland. This is a 3-bedroom, 2-bath Rambler, just under 1,300 square feet, new flooring throughout, great kitchen, brand new stainless steel appliances. I mean, this is just a fantastic West Richland house, fully fenced backyard. And that's coming in at $195,000. So really hitting that popular price points in Tri-Cities. These do not last very long. If you're looking to see any of those, shoot me a message. Go to kenmoreteam.com. Send us a message. We'll get one of our agents out there to check these out. If you have any other questions about appraisals, going through that appraisal process, pricing the home with an appraiser prior to putting a home on the market, please reach out. We'd love to help you with those questions. Tom, on the refinance, because rates still screamingly low, they didn't change much. You went to Alaska. I think they even got lower, so mm-hmm. you're doing a great job.
They're hanging down there.
And so if people want to take advantage of seeing if they could refinance or applying to be pre-approved, What's the website for you?
It's TomCoinHomeLoans.com. And folks, I've been getting about a call a day from people needing to refinance or starting to refinance, and you could potentially save yourself a lot of money. So give me a call, 783-7300. Love to chat with you.
And we'll be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.